Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you. Introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode, so click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by Union Digital Bank, a fully digital bank with a mission to empower every Filipino everywhere by providing easy access to digital financial services for consumers and businesses. Union Digital Bank partners with startups to co-create financial products to meet the needs of their customers. Contact Union Digital Bank to explore how they can power your platform with embedded financial services. For more information about Union Digital Bank, please see their website at www.uniondigitalbank.io. Stay updated by following them on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Also by Shoppable Business, your number one source for procuring products for your business in the Philippines. Discover authentic branded products online. Shop bulk, save big, and secure authentic products with official sales invoices at Shoppable Business today. And also brought to you by DragonPay. DragonPay is the pioneer in alternative payments in the Philippines. DragonPay is the reigning fintech of the year in last year's Philippine Fintech Festival. Sign up now at www.dragonpay.ph.
What happens when you become a founder is you actually have to disappear yourself. I don't know if that makes sense for you because there are so many other things that's more important about your concerns about you. Because you have to put the company, the project, what you're building, your people, empowering your people, getting revenue, talking to brands, and the normal concerns that we have the privilege of having as employees go out the window.
Welcome to Hustle Share, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of Share Podcast. We finally got this girl. Apparently, we are from the same generation when I had her on a quick mentorship session in Kubo. I think middle to late last year. It's like, hey, Ina, how young are you? And she goes, I'm 1980-something. I'm like, what? You're on same age as me. You're Madaya because you look younger than your age. So that's good. But again, we're almost in the same space dealing with celebs and whatnot. It's not an easy job to do. But before we get carried away, let's welcome to the show the CEO of Hey Roomie, Miss Ina Flores. Woo-hoo!
Hello, hello.
Welcome to the show. Hey, hey, hey.
So happy to be here.
There you go.
Hey, Rumi.
All right. So again, a big fan of what you guys have been doing. I know how difficult it is to be in this influencer era that keeps evolving year on year. So I'm not able to keep...
Week by week.
Okay, I'm just saying. See, yes. I'm already super outpaced, right? But before I get carried away, I need to ask you the million-dollar question. Ina, what's your hustle?
The hustle is empowering Filipinos to connect them to the things that they love. And that's something that I think has been driving what's behind what I've been doing from the very beginning. From when I was an architect to when I was in marketing to building Hey Rumi. So that seems to be like the line that connects everything together.
That's amazing. And again, that's what we're going to be dissecting later, because at the end of the day, right, again, connecting Filipinos with stuff they love can be very, very broad, but can also be very specific. But before we even get to like how specific that is, we need to understand that whole journey of why this is the thing you want to do in this stage of your life, because we're going to have to go all the way back and understand young Ina's hustle, because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. There you go.
That's a long time. That's decades. Yes, that's like...
That's it. We're all the way... This is at the Big Bang. We're at the Big Bang right now. You are molecule number 382. No, I'm just kidding. But okay. Yeah, I want to understand. Obviously, we were now seeing the current version of you. But every hustler or every entrepreneur have come from an origin point. And that origin point is something we don't have control of. I want to understand, what was the situation you were born into, and when you were into this situation, what was the first exposure you had with hustling? Because we don't hustle on our own right away. We either hustle by circumstance or hustle by chance, right? So what was that environment like, and who were your very first influencers, no pun intended, in hustling?
Okay so very, very interesting. So when I was very young, I was super exposed to things like musical theater. And this was back in the 80s. I reveal an age. When things were not available online. So it's all about cassette tapes, right? And relatives that come from the States that bring those things in. And I loved Star Wars. I loved Indiana Jones. And again, these were Betamax that we recorded from laser discs, right? So I've always been into, I guess, pop culture and just things that I love and I like. And I like music. I like writing. And I was in a school that kind of encouraged creativity. It was a non-traditional school.
What school?
So it's Community of Learners.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, why?
I'm calling. I'm a Batang CL. What the fuck?
Oh my God, CL. Yeah, what? Call kids for the
Holy
win.
Shit. I did Holy not know shit, you. That's why you look familiar.
So that's why you keep asking me, right?
I think I fucking met you before. I don't know where and when.
Holy shit, man. Who's your batch? Sino mga classmates?
Oto.
No, who's your classmates?
Dino Pascual, Aya Bautista, Kevin Castell. Those fuckers.
Dude. Oh my God. Dino Pascual is a really close friend.
There. That's my batch.
Like, until now.
I taught him how to play the guitar.
He taught you how to play the guitar.
I was the first guy who played guitar in our section. And I was like, alright, fuck it. I'm gonna teach these fuckers too.
Sobrang small world. I cannot. Hindi ko kaya.
Holy
so,
shit.
So, syempre, mundong sinateacher mo.
Okay, let's see the ding. Nagsimula. So, now we have the same foundation. I understand. I know now exactly.
Now you understand. Mm. Now you get it, right? So, I guess for those...
Wait, what batch are you? Now I'm gonna make you old.
No!
Who are your batchmates?
Sina Anto Garceliano,
Anto.
Nikki Kuda,
so
Nika Ochoa.
Anto's sister. Aya's my batch.
Younger sister. So I'm like a batch older than you.
Okay. There you go. All right. So again, doesn't matter. Batang CL for life. There you go.
Anong siya for life? Okay. Naabutan mo ba yung what campus did you get to?
Castilla. But I also was in the first one in, I don't remember that now, but I was enrolled there.
Granada?
Yeah, Granada. Granada Street. But there was a campus before Padao.
Oh!
Yeah.
Wow. So you're really batang CL talaga.
Bull Elementary. So
Bull Elementary. Oh my God. Same.
Yes.
Oh my God. Okay.
So for those people who don't understand what the fuck we're talking about, why we're so freaking out. Okay, so Community of Learners is a very unique school because it's a
very experimental school, correct? Also, right?
You don't only realize that after you go to the normal world, but we're in our own little bubble. What we were taught technically is imagine this. In a normal Philippine school, right? You have uniform, you take what, 10 subjects a day, right? For us, we have 3 to 4 subjects a day, American style. We had our own desks and whatnot. And it's almost like a big ass play school. But again, the way we were taught, it's very art driven. Art and whatnot. But again,
very critical thinking driven, if you remember.
Correct.
We were always asked told to question things.
Yes, which is not normal in a normal Philippine society because you're basically asked to follow all the time. So in a way, we're always pasaway. That's why.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yes. We always question status quo. So a lot of artists, writers, activists come from that school, I guess.
Yes. Rarely entrepreneurs, though. So, look at that.
Really?
No, I'm saying I haven't really encountered much. But a lot of artists, yes, absolutely.
Yes.
There. Okay, so what did CL teach you? Because we always say Community of Learners foundational. Because when I left Community of Learners for one reason alone. I wanted to play basketball. I was already beating everybody's ass in grade 7 in CL. And I was like...
So, WVL ako?
No, so there. Okay. So, I was SBP, whatever, right? I was captain. I was like, man, I'm busting all these fuckers' ass. Like, I don't want to be stuck here. I want to play in the UAAP. So, I transferred to USD. And there, I was able to play, right? So, there. In CL, what was that experience like? And did you have first hustles there? And where did you go to high school after?
So, in CL... Remember how they really just teach us that it's basically anything goes and follow your heart, kind of, right? Question the status quo. And in golf, we were always taught to be creative, to follow what we're interested in, to ask questions, to be curious. But we didn't grow up in a framework where we needed to follow a grade.
Yeah.
But rather, we were encouraged to create things. So I don't know if you remember, but as early as elementary, we were taught to create stories and write stories, both in Filipino and English.
Yep.
We were encouraged to write songs. So it was never be a doctor and a lawyer after, but rather what is it that interests you and pursue that. And it might not look like anything. So it's a very out of the box kind of upbringing.
Correct.
Upbringing rather. Now, very interestingly enough, after grade 6, when I moved to high school, I moved to an international school in Cebu.
Wait, you didn't go grade 7?
I didn't do grade 7. I skipped grade 7.
For me, okay. That's why I became super... I became like a weird dude because I was older than all my batchmates in high school. Like, why are you old?
I think that was the time when grade 7 was new.
So wait, you didn't get to grade 7. You went grade 6. You transferred to an IS in Cebu.
Yeah.
Okay.
In Cebu.
So
in Cebu.
Here's one of the things that really shocked the living hell out of me. Okay, I still remember it vividly because it made me cry like a little girl. Okay. First day of class in UST High School. All right. Come super non-traditional. Follow your heart. Figure out whatever the fuck you want. In the most traditional school in the world, in UST, 7 to 4, we took out all the grades in a super and we had armchairs and all that shit. I'm like, holy shit, what did I get myself into? And I still remember vividly, I come back and I cried my balls out. And you know who I tried to call? Teacher Marge. Teacher Marge, can I just go back? I'm not sure.
Teacher Marge is everyone's anger in life.
I don't know. I was like, Teacher Marge, I don't want to do this anymore. I'll just go back there. But I toughed it out, worked out pretty well for me. That's where I actually blossomed because everything that I did in QC, I'm QC, in CL apparently, was all just prep work pala of what I could be. Because even in CL, I was already an odd guy. Meaning, my mom always gave me shit because I'm super hyper. And she was telling me, don't go against the grain. And I've always been contrarian. I've always been pasimuno of all the bullshit that was happening in that class, right? I even one time made one of the fire extinguishers go off in the room and it was cut off. And I was sent to Teacher Penny's office. And that's when
Teacher Penny was our principal. Yeah,
owns the fucking school, by the way.
Owns the school.
And is the director of Batibot. And that's why we're all the talents of Batibot and whatnot. But
we were the talents of Batibot. Oh my goodness. So yes. For people who know what Batibot is, the kids, the extra kids there, that's mostly golf kids. Yep. So that's us.
I was one of the guys doing in the intro song. Anyway, whatever. All the foundational stuff that I did, being contrarian, being pasaway, being not following rules all the time. Apparently, down the road, these are going to be the foundational things that apparently are blessings towards being an entrepreneur. Because fuck
for
rules.
Sure.
And I did it more in USC. And all of a sudden, hey, I didn't do this in grade school. I got in. So I really popped out of my shell in USC. Because in grade school, I remember this feeling vividly. I really never felt that I belonged. Because I knew where my origins was. And let's just call it what it is. CL is a well-off school. We weren't well-off. Okay? Mm-hmm. Come on. So I just felt that. Like, oh, man, now I'm hanging out with these kids who had their house, who had all these PS4s, and I go back and like, how come I don't have it? Right? So, but my mom, hindsight being 2020, did everything that she could, being a single mom. Being a crazy ass child to make me feel like I belong. But again, that was an inside thing that I had to get over with. In USC, I felt like, motherfucker, I belong here. I can make a killing here. What was that feeling for you? Moving from, my God, Manila to Cebu.
I think going back a little bit to our experience in golf, I felt like looking back, all of our classmates came in all shapes and sizes. Yeah. And from different societal and demographic background, you know what I mean? We had special kids as classmates that we didn't know were special. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's after we went off and realized, oh, that's not normal.
Yep.
But the way CL was structured, it is really like everything in society, you kind of put it in this microcosm of a community, right? So you've kind of met a version of certain types of people by the time you leave that campus.
Yep.
And so when I went to Cebu, so my entire family kind of moved to Cebu because my mom's work was there.
Wow.
So from Manila.
Did you even speak Cebuano at all?
No, obviously not. And you know how Cebuanos are very
particular.
About
you speaking Tagalog, okay?
I love that. So I transfer from a very open, creative school to suddenly a school where I had to wear a uniform.
Oh shit, that's exactly what I felt.
And the kids had to go to like everyone goes to church on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And very conservative, most of my classmates were Chinese.
Oh man.
And so it was a bit of a culture shock for me. But at the same time, I kind of became like the source of awakening for some of my classmates.
Wow.
Because I knew so much shit that
you're the BI. Like me, I'm the BI, bro. That's what it is.
I mean, golf kids, right? You're like the reality early, diba?
Yeah, you go to Grotto and try to fucking fuck with meme, whatever, right? That's it.
You know, everyone knew when Meme died, by the way.
Yeah,
like,
that was sad.
For those listening, Meme is a goat.
Mm-hmm.
He's a school goat.
Yep.
But what was very different in my school in Cebu was that almost all of my classmates, they owned businesses in Cebu.
Mm, man.
So I remember when their parents would first meet me, the question isn't where do your parents work, but rather what's your business? And it's assumed that everyone had a business.
Wow. What's the name of this school?
Center for International Education.
Wow. Okay.
So we were the first high school batch. It was a new school.
Okay.
And it was a little bit like Qolf in the sense that they wanted to be progressive. It's more of like my classmates came from a little bit more of a traditional background.
And they brought that along with them.
Yeah, a bit. So they wanted to be forward thinking. We had a computer, a complete computer lab at the time. We were taught Cisco. We were taught how to do HTML, MIRC. Yeah, we were taught to put together CPUs. And that was in 1999. So it was pretty advanced. Mm-hmm. And we had interesting subjects, like we played the violin. So I learned how to play at an orchestra, fencing, Aikido. It was like straight out of an anime. If I were to be honest. And our uniforms also looked like it came straight out of an anime. And for a 90s kid, right? That's like, whoa, cool.
Right.
So in this particular space, that's, I guess, my first exposure with tech.
Mm.
And at the same time, seeing how my classmates' parents hustled in a different way.
Got it.
And also seeing that side of things. So both Chinese and Filipino entrepreneurs.
Got it.
And so I remember we would have field trips in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And when we would go to field trips on high school, we would go to the factories of my classmates.
What?
Yeah. So all of the field trips that we would go to would be the businesses of my different classmates.
That's amazing.
So that was a very different thing. If we needed to go to field trips to look at the local government, to kind of look at their structure, mm-hmm. we would go there because a classmate is the child of the governor or the child of the mayor.
That's fucking intense. That's just like exactly how I felt in Qolf. And then I felt like a normal dude when I was in USC. But yeah, okay. Right.
And then when just so you know, that was also when it was a very crazy time, my experience, because on the one hand, you'd have that. And then we would go to summer jobs.
Wow.
We would become my friends and I would become baggers in SM. Now, SM usually doesn't do that because we were underage.
Right.
But it's because like the parents is related somewhat. So we were given that kind of grassroots experience. But it was weird because you know that because it's connected to a parent that owns something, right? So when in Qolf, we kind of had that societal awakening, grassroots, what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then in high school, I saw that side of things, that world of big business and entrepreneurship and the kind of lifestyle that goes with that. So come college, my mom was like, okay, we want to even things out for you. You're going to UP.
They said that.
My mom was pretty much like, because I passed La Salle, Ateneo, UP, UST, right? Mm, and all of my classmates from high school were going to Ateneo.
Mm.
So obviously, I wanted to go to Ateneo with everyone else. And my mom's like, no, you've had that in high school
UP
already.
Ikot. You go to UP Ikot.
You need to go back and experience life in UP. So it's a little bit of a whiplash from elementary to high school. And UP is very, you either swing, you either sink or you float. There's no one to hold your hand there.
Correct.
It's really you and what you can put on the table.
And when you came back here, you came back with your family or what was that setup like?
So by the time my mom's contract ended in Cebu, it was just the perfect time. It was 4 years, so 4 years high school and then 4 years in university, straight to UP.
Got it.
And what was interesting was because I think I told you I loved plays, I loved reading, right? So I wanted to get into the College of Arts and Letters in UP. So English studies.
Okay.
But my dad's like, nah, don't do that. He's like, so I already passed, right? I passed under College of Arts and Letters. He's like, no, you should shift.
What?
You can just read if you want because you already love reading. Just read. You should be a landscape architect.
What?
That's what my dad said. My dad's like, look, it's so cool. It's like a new profession. And being a young girl that loved her dad very much, I'm like, okay, I'll do that. So Because I also didn't have a very strong opinion on what I wanted to do. Mm. And he seemed very excited about it. And it sounded cool. So I'm like, okay, let's transfer. So I transferred to the College of Architecture. And landscape architecture was at its infancy.
Yeah. People probably didn't even know what the hell a landscape was in what?
No, not a lot of people. And it was a course. Yeah, it was a course that was only offered in UP Diliman.
Wow.
And at the time as well, I think it was our batch was the start where there were a little bit more girls, women catch on.
Okay.
But the ones who are already practicing, they're mostly guys. No. So anyway, I was in landscape architecture for a while and I realized that I didn't like it while I was studying.
How soon was it?
I think first, second year, I didn't like it.
Okay.
I didn't like it too much. I think it was because of the way it was taught.
Okay.
I was bored by the way it was taught. It was very technical. Draw this, draw that. Where's the storytelling? Where's like the history in this? Like, how would society benefit? What is that big thing? How will it contribute, yeah, right? And contrary to that, if I go to the College of Arts and Letters and the sociology department in UP, that was where all of the authors were. Mm-hmm. That's where all the political people, Jessica Safra.
Right.
And so I remember I would always just get extra subjects in that college and go there and just love it.
So get a kick. I'm there.
Get a kick out of it. And that's where I feel I just loved it so much. And the people there and the kind of dialogue that we would talk about society and the current
state. Full circle CL moment right there. But as an adult.
Holy, that's true. I guess the CL, the Kolf upbringing, no, it never leaves you.
Yep.
Thing though with the Kolf upbringing is nothing is given to you by force, mm-hmm, right? You learn to love on your own. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in any case, I was a very good girl. So I still...
You finished it still.
I finished it. So my problem was, I finished it, and I finished it quite well.
Despite you not loving it.
The problem was, I was good at it. Like, I was Oblation Scholar twice.
Wow.
And I was College Scholar a few times. I think I even got Best Student in Landscape Architecture in the third year.
Amazing.
Which... it's the reason why I couldn't shift.
Got it. You were too good.
Because
it didn't make sense.
It didn't make sense and I didn't understand. All I know is I didn't like it. And I couldn't explain that because they would say, okay, where are you going? Where would you want to go? Mm. And I wouldn't. Mm. And as a young person who didn't, I think I was a clear case study of like feeling lost and not knowing what to do. So I just stuck with it because that's what was there. Mm. I think one thing showed, so I stuck with it even if I didn't like it. I finished it, but there was something that happened. I actually got delayed by 1 year.
Ooh.
So I got depressed because I really didn't like what I was doing. I remember this moment because when you are in Archie, you plates, right?
Yeah.
At the time, we weren't AutoCADing it. We were drawing it. Mm. And so we would always just do all-nighters. That was normal.
Drafting.
And I remember
T-square and all your...
and the drawing board, right, and the triangles, all of that. I love the tools.
Yeah.
The art
part. We did that for some weird reason. First year high school in UST, they taught us drafting. So I know how to do drafting. I carried around a T-square first year high school and the varsity bag. What a combo. There you go.
Right. It was a thing. So anyway, I remember drawing and I remember getting tired. So the bed was right beside me.
Mm.
I was lying down. I said, I lied down for 15 minutes. I ended up lying down for 24 hours.
Holy shit.
And I remember my dad at 6 a.m. in the morning just looked at me to kind of, okay, I'm going to work. And then when he came home, like at night, I was still in the exact same spot. I didn't move.
Wow.
And that's when I kind of realized, oh, maybe I should do something about this. And that's kind of the first time I realized that I have a tendency to just go do and finish things in spite of myself, which is both a weakness and a strength.
Yes.
Yeah. So I do not give up. even when things, when I should, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was in college. So I, because in my mind, I have to finish this or I have to do this, mm-hmm. right? So in spite of myself, I do that. So that was, I guess, one of the foundations of why I feel like I have the grit to do a Absolutely. Weird thing.
Whoever comes from CL is not a fucking normal dude, okay? We crazy. Yeah, yeah. All right?
We're crazy. But around that time also, I was doing side hustles. Like I was drawing cartoons. I was drawing, I was creating graphic for shirts. So I don't know if you know this, but there was an era back in those days where there was this brand called the Perfect White Shirt.
Yep.
And it had
Perfect White Tee. There you go.
Yeah, Perfect White Tee. You know the illustrations there? The UST.
Yeah. Was that you?
That was me.
Oh my God, so amazing.
I was one of the illustrators of that brand. So I was already, I like playing around. I was bored with just one thing.
Mm.
So it was just natural for me to like kind of get into different things.
Got it.
So that was my UP. So I did graduate landscape architecture. And being the good daughter that I was, I practiced landscape architecture for a while.
Mm.
Because after graduation, you already graduated, might as well practice a bit.
Yeah.
Because you're already practicing, might as well take the board exam.
Wow. And you plowed right? through it, and I'm pretty damn sure you fucking aced it.
So I passed the board exam, but while doing it, I think a part of me was also looking for, because again, it was not something that I liked, right? So it, to kind of balance that, I got into multi-sports.
Mm.
So I got into triathlons.
Wow. Now that's so, why you look so young. You're fit. You look like you're in your 20s. No, fuck you not. I swear. I thought you were in your 20s. I don't kid you. All right. Wow.
It's good. It's like I'm beginning a new chapter. No, all the
I was
day,
like,
right?
Dude, how young is this person? Right? I was like, man, I feel old. Okay.
So that part, I think, also kind of showed how I might be following a line, right? Because that's what society tells me to do. But for some reason, I find myself doing other things around it. That's for me.
Yeah.
So I remember I would do so many extracurricular stuff while having that day job. So I would train for triathlons.
Wow.
But I also volunteered for this leadership thing that kind of gave me the sociology part, the people part that I missed so much.
Nice.
But what was also interesting, because I mentioned, so by the time my batch graduated, mm-hmm. there were more girls in our batch, nice. Right? Mm-hmm. But when we got into the workforce, we were the girls.
The girls.
And most of the people we work with, because this was construction and design. Yep.
Very male dominated.
And I remember one of my key projects was The Grove by Rockwell in Pasig.
What? Yes. That's a beautiful spot right till now. Yes. And that's pretty old now, right? So.
Yes, yes. And I remember we were the local counterpart of that. And that was the project that was assigned to me specifically. Amazing. So, oh my God. It's stuck in my brain, the little details that are there at the moment. But I remember going there because there's a meeting every week. And it would really just be engineers and electrical engineers yep. and architects. And they would be men. And when it's my turn to present, it's like, oh, iha, halika.
I can run longer than you, dumbass. There you go.
And it was, I guess, early training.
Yeah.
Being comfortable in spaces that are not necessary. Like, it was really early training to kind of navigate through a girl in places that not a lot of girls are in, but also holding your own, yeah. but being, you know, creating connections
yep.
with people, depending on what's appropriate, right? So those were the early days. Now, I was part of the batch of Filipino landscape architects when the landscape architectural scene in other countries were booming.
Okay.
This was the time when they were creating the marina, the gardens by the bay.
Whoa.
It was the time when Dubai was creating those islands.
Whoa.
So my batchmates were migrating to Singapore and Dubai.
Yeah.
So I'm aging myself again. So my batchmates were the ones that are literally, you know,
yeah,
part
yeah,
of
yeah, yeah.
And so I remember at that time, I got an email from a firm in Dubai inviting me to work there.
Okay.
Essentially, I was in an intersection. I've been working in a profession that I didn't like.
Okay.
And suddenly, I have to make a decision if I'm going to leave the country and pursue that full time. Obviously, the pay is great there, right? Or, you know, now's the time to do that. And I remember getting that email, and instead of thinking, oh, wow, great opportunity, nanlamig ako. How do you say that?
Coldening. I got cold feet. There you go.
Or rather, it was the total opposite of being excited. It was like, oh my God, this is going to be my life. And if this is going to be my life, it was such a depressing future. It for me was a wake-up call of
because okay, from the get-go, you never really loved it. I mean, you learned how to love it and excel in it, but it wasn't in your heart.
It wasn't in my heart.
Got it.
So the profession's great, by the way. And maybe if I learned it in another country, it might be a different story.
Correct.
But it didn't work here. So I remember thinking, if I were going to explore something else, it needs to be now. At that time, I was 25 years old.
Got it.
So I was
Quarter life crisis.
There you go. And around that time, I think there was an opportunity to there was a wild card opportunity to apply for a PR company.
Okay, which we'll talk about later. All right. Okay. The cliffhanger is out because now we're talking about Ina's career shift at 25, which again, this is not her first career shift because eventually she goes full career crazy on, which is maybe becoming a startup founder. But we'll talk about that more after the break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate their growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24.
And we're back in the break. We are still with Ina Flores and Told Me, who now is apparently is my kababata in Batang CL. Now I understand you. I understand you deeply because I understand the type of upbringing. And then you literally didn't even love what you did, but you were killing it. And now you go through a career shift. You went through being in PR with Jaiser Maklang real quick. But just quickly, I want to understand, what was that shift like? Because a lot of entrepreneurs, either, and this is very probably the precursor of making the jump to becoming a founder, right? Mm. It's scary Because you, especially if you're doing well in what you're doing and you've established something, again, 25 years old and you know you're killing it, you got a job offer to go abroad. And now you decide to like, yo, I'll follow my heart. Yep.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? And what was the rationale that you had in your head to make that jump on that perfect time? Because had you not done that, you would have been stuck on that path.
Yes. I think, so two things. I think this is a very Filipino thing. I was in landscape architecture because it came from a recommendation from my dad. So the mindset is, I'm doing this for my family. And you know how your grandparents are, uy, architect yung apo ko. It's a very Filipino thing.
Flex material. There you go.
Flex material, right? And I think it was a coming of age moment when I realized that checking the boxes for my family and for other people, it's not gonna fly well with my own sense of self. Mm-hmm. What I need to do moving forward, because it is my life. Mm-hmm. And it came to a point where dropping everything that I knew to do and the connections that I had in an industry that I totally know.
And you were killing it, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For something that is totally unknown, the internal alarm was so much louder, and it was enough for me to drop that.
Wow.
And do something completely different. So at that particular point in time, it was also a matter of, I guess, listening to that internal voice and giving it a chance to talk. But also at the same time, by this point, I kind of have paid my dues already. Mm-hmm. Like, I already honored doing the course, graduating, getting the license. So I could say that I tried, and the answer is still no. And so the jump to PR was actually not as out, as left field as people might think. Because when I was doing landscape architecture, what I loved about it was the storytelling. Mm-hmm. And some of my batchmates would be like, what storytelling? I guess in my mind, I was doing stories when I was designing. Because when I would design, it would always come from, creating this layout is gonna affect behavior of people living in this space where they will do this rather than this. So it was about storytelling, it was about people, it was about behavior. And I think marketing at the heart of it is all about that.
Yep.
It's all about creating things that move people in a way that's organic, or in a way that really hits what's important to them. So when I went into PR, I was actually put in the planning department.
Whoa.
So it was very interesting because I think I have a totally different background. When I was doing an interview, it wasn't a normal interview. They made me do an audition. They made me create a presentation about myself.
Wow.
And when I did that presentation, I think it was a little bit creative. CL kid, right?
Did you write in a bond paper, pulled it in half, and then colored it up? There you go.
No. It was, I titled it like Life by Design. And it was all about design and the different ways it has kind of informed my life. Visual design, but also narrative design. And I think when I presented that, they were like, okay, we're going to put this girl in planning. So that kind of started my journey in marketing communications, which I loved. This was what I was looking for that was missing in landscape architecture. It was really, because I was exposed to so many different brands and different industries, insider information, from real estate to FMCG to tourism. Even before things were announced in public, we knew what was happening.
Yep. The inside scoop.
And I loved it so much. And I love being able to be part of creating how that story is going to be told towards people, yes, seeing it come to life and seeing people responding to it. I love that so much. But it's very important to note that industry is very, very stressful.
Cutthroat. Let's just call it what it is.
Very cutthroat. So that was also a sign for me. The fact that there would be, the attrition rate was so high. Mm-hmm. There would be people coming in 2 weeks later, they're just gone. Awol. They couldn't take pressure because you need to be on your feet all the time and the grit, but also creative and smart about things and about how you present. And that's kind of where I learned the ropes of, you know, discarte, doing things. Like, there are certain presentations that need to be done, like, in 4 hours. Sometimes I would be editing plans on the way to the brand.
Yep.
Sometimes I would be editing presentations while someone is presenting. So the training of the focus, getting things done, not giving up, that was all.
Not giving up was already part of you very, very early on.
Not giving was already a part of me very early on. I think this kind of made me more like finishing things very fast.
Snappy. And
not being, this one was very good. Because when you're in marketing, things get scrapped all the time so fast. So you make suggestions all the time and you don't get attached to how great and good your suggestion or big idea is. But you just pivot right away based on what the new circumstance and conditions are. And that was very, very valuable. Like, failure or criticism is nothing. It just slides off. It's just part of the work because the bigger picture is the work, right?
Exactly. That's amazing. And that type of environment is literally startup life, just in a different form, right? Because you're gonna get punched to the face and you're gonna get thrown back. And if you don't fall in love with your ideas, you're gonna be able to pivot right away. And again, now I understand why you did this. But one thing that really struck me here in your LinkedIn, I'm stalking you a little bit, right? So you do that, and then you co-founded Social Play and Innovation Network while you also sort of doing, full circle moment, you're doing strategic communication and planning for real estate. So now you're back in the real estate industry again in Philippine Realty and Holdings Corporation, while after you co-founded also Social Play and Innovation Network. Talk about that two hustles that you did at the same time almost.
So when I was doing my stint in PR, I was also doing advocacy work with a school, PUP San Juan.
Got it.
Me and my partner put up Social Play and Innovation Network. And it was really meant to empower underserved youth and kind of expose them to things like, I don't know, confidence building, all of these other perspectives that are not easily or readily taught to schools like that. It was a public school.
Got it.
And so Social Play and Innovation Network was actually invited by the Alpha Program in the Dublin Web Summit.
What?
To, yeah.
Amazing.
Sorry. That was happening while I was doing my
geyser. Yep.
Your grind. So that was actually my first exposure in the amazing and exciting and dramatic world of startup.
Welcome because to the club. There you go.
Right? Because the Dublin Web Summit. That was the time of Facebook Vine. The keynote speaker was Elon Musk.
What?
Yes. Yes. This was back in 2014, 2015.
Right. Tesla. That was the main thing at that time.
He was just starting, right? And at the time, there was no TikTok. It was Vine. It was Vine. Facebook. And I remember going into this. It really was the who's who. Because it was in Europe. Mm-hmm. This was in Dublin. And so it was the first time that we just met and I saw the hustle of different startups,
right?
Tech startups. And I remember thinking, holy, I love this energy and I love what they're doing and I love how they're solving problems and using tech to do that. And it was such a totally new world. I think it planted a seed. And at the time, there was no way in my mind that I was going to get in because I had a full-time job and this was a side hustle I was doing. But that's what started something, right? So I remember thinking how great it would be to have something similar in the Philippines, to be able to bring people from like experts, subject matter experts, creative folks from different places and bring this kind of conversation and excitement and dialogue to Filipinos and inspire them to be great at what they do. So coming out of that, actually, my partners and some of my friends created the Collaborative Carnival. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Sounds familiar.
I think this was back in 2016, 2015.
Got it.
But it was way before there was MapCon. It was way before those tech events were big here.
Okay.
Kind of created our own little one, and we brought in people from the space. We brought in 30 under 30 folks. It was the first time that Green Sun opened very recently. Tech, it was very visual.
And the 3D walls, technically.
Yeah, the Global Shaper, we were in partnership with the Global Shapers. We were in partnership with these things. There were 300, 500 people that came, but it was very packed, and the people were really very inspiring from different segments of society. So that, I think, kind of, I met a lot of people there that I went back to when I started doing when I got into tech. So that those side hustles and projects created slowly a network of friends that I didn't know eventually would be part of my startup journey later on.
Got it. Sorry, I'll just go fast forward here a little bit because we need to talk about Hey Roomie and how that happened. So obviously you did this. Now there's seedlings of, you know, tech startup being there. You know, you're starting to really become curious and take action, going closer and closer to the fire, right? But walk me through, after doing, again, Spin, the Philippine Realty and Holdings Corporation, and you even became head of strategy for Infinite Ideas Advertising Agency. You went to Hensha Life for 3 years, seven months, in the middle of the pandemic. But what I want to understand now, so you're coming from a Hensha, right? And for those people who don't know what a Hensha Life is, listen to a lot of the people that I've had here on the show, like, the Gigil Boys. You know, it's not easy, right? Herbert and Badonsky of Gigil. You know, it's one of the most stressful places that you can work in. And you were doing this in the middle of the pandemic, pre-pandemic, in the middle of the pandemic. But how did that trigger, in the middle of the pandemic, going from doing this to then go startup? Tell us that story.
So I was onboarded from a very cushy client life, right? Mm. I was onboarded to kind of build up an advertising agency.
Yeah.
So I love the idea of building from scratch. So a lot of the things that I do, even that real estate, the reason why I was there was they were coming out of conservatorship.
Mm.
And it was like bringing them back to market and branding it in a certain way. And again, creating that narrative, right?
Okay.
So a lot of, I guess, my expertise has been market entrant products, you know, breathing life into things like that. So that advertising agency was also a very interesting stint for me because we were working with Coca-Cola, we were working with Nestle, we were working with the big multinationals we were doing below the line projects.
Ooh.
So it was very events. It was very, the Coca-Cola Fiesta that was happening all over the country. It was being front and center when Sandara Park, for the first time, Pen Shop did the biggest meet and greet. It was the start of those series of meet and greets with K-pop stars. So we were also behind that. So seeing up close and personal the power of these celebrities and the power of fans, grassroots. So that was a very, very good and vibrant experience. Now, when the pandemic hit, because a lot of our projects were on ground, it literally killed the agency.
Whoa.
And I remember thinking, I was so burnt out because I was the only planner in that agency, right? Mm-hmm. So when everyone was kind of on rest or on vacation, I was like transitioning all of the projects to online projects or Yikes. Social media projects, right? And that burnt me out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So after that stint, I resigned soon after just because it was so toxic already. And during the pandemic, I was the only able-bodied person in the house. So I don't know if you remember, but at the height of it, just going to the grocery store took 4 hours
yep.
from lines to cleaning and bringing the stuff in. So I was, because everyone in the household had comorbidity, I was the only one to physically do things. Oh. So on top of that, I was working beyond hours.
Oh.
So that really, and I remember in the 6 months that I didn't have work, I was thinking about what what's next, or what's there for me? I remember thinking how, because a lot of people, it was a very insightful and enlightening time, and life-changing. There were a few people in my life that passed away.
Oh, no,
that
I'm sorry. Really,
yeah, and it really got me to what's important. Why am I spending 12 hours trying to sell this brand to people? And it is really what I want to do. And so it boiled down to, if I'm going to do something, it better be something that is worth the time that we have, right? Yeah. We're not getting older. And so two things coming out of there. Number one, I wanted to do something that is creative,
okay,
that would have impact and would be something that is close to what I like.
Okay.
And next is, I want to do something relevant to the generation today. I don't want to go back to advertising. And, you know, it felt I needed the fresh energy of what's relevant now. Because if I can choose, I want. And so I remember thinking tech. But I didn't know in what form. I thought I was going to be part of a digital marketing agency. Or maybe I'll apply into a company na startup. Ganyan. I didn't know it was going to turn into this. But those are just the two things that I threw into the universe. Something creative, something that's mine, I guess, and something that's technology driven.
Okay. Now, how did that manifest then? Because of course, you already threw that into the universe and you've been a master in a universe in your own right, because whatever you really put your mind or heart to, if you decide for some reason, you're one of them people that I've seen that when you decide, in a matter of time, you're going to get in there. So when you threw that to the universe, what did the universe throw back right back at you to give you that entry into tech and the creative industry?
The universe tested me, gave me.
Okay.
So first, I had an option to apply for an awesome fintech company.
Okay.
And next, a multimedia company offered me partnership. And then third, an influencer marketing agency kind of threw the idea of if I could manage the operations. So all really, really good options.
Okay.
And the test is none of them checked the box that I asked the universe.
What are the boxes though?
Which is I wanted something that was creative.
Okay.
Creative, something that could be mine, and something that's tech driven.
Got it.
So that the tech that was offered to me was not something that was mine.
Okay.
And I didn't know if it was creative. The multimedia creative that was offered to me was not tech driven. And then the
influencer
agency was creative, but it was also not tech driven and it wasn't mine. So I said no to all three.
Whoa. So where did that take you after? How did that this manifest into go into this now?
2 weeks later, the influencer marketing agency went back to me.
Okay.
The founder and the owner is a very good friend of mine. And I was telling her, I'm done with agency life. I could do it with my eyes closed, but please don't let me do that again.
Mm-hmm.
But she was like, okay, we understand. And what about this? Because they were also looking towards tech enabling or innovating for that agency because they know how fast and brisk the trends are.
Got it.
And they were actually one of the first adopters of influencer marketing and who groomed YouTubers at the time when it was still celebrity driven, such that when the pandemic happened, they were in such a great position to capitalize on the trend when influencer marketing just went off. So they blew up. And so their instincts were telling them that they need to start looking again for what's the next step and needed someone to head that. So they were like, okay, you come in, we want you to future-proof this space. And it's something that you can create. We're going to support you. And that was the start of Hey Ruby.
Okay, well, so, all right. This is a very pivotal moment. So it's the agency, obviously, looking at your LinkedIn, is called InCircle. had prior partners, flex your co-founders, because eventually they're going to be your co-founders at this list. Who is this friend that you're talking to, and what were they doing already in Circle?
So Jules Veloso and Icy Mendoza have been my friends for quite a while. Mm-hmm. We've done projects even before InCircle was InCircle. So because I do strategic planning, right? So we would have collaborations together. And even when I was in that advertising agency, I would get them. So there was that close relationship already. So the two of them, three of them are the founders of InCircle. And at this particular point, InCircle was also at a pivotal time in they were growing exponentially like crazy. And like I said, they were very, very smart in anticipating how influencer marketing is going to be and how it's changing the landscape and how it's now really becoming a real budget with brands.
Yeah.
So they built that from scratch, and now InCircle has grown into one of the fastest and trusted influencer marketing agency in the country today. And what I love about it is we're very strategic driven. Jules Veloso was also a colleague in the PR company that I came from. So very strong ties.
Same suffering.
Amazing work ethic. Yeah. Same discarte. So, and our strength really is in strategy and planning. So putting that into the space of influencer marketing. So it's not just about booking talent, but really creating, again, things that are relevant to the KPIs and objectives of the brand. So InCircle actually brought me in as head of innovation with the intent of creating at the time, whatever that might be. So the first year, first 6 months is really, I was still kind of helping out in the planning strategy department of InCircle, but it's really deep diving on the communities that we're working with, the influencers that we're working with, what are the behaviors of users on the internet. Mm-hmm. And this was a time when Gen Z was coming of age. They're starting to have...
They're now in the workforce. Oh, huh?
They're now... Papunta. Young millennials or the ones in the
2021,
workforce.
I already had some Gen Zs and they made a freaking wave coming in through it. So I felt that. Felt really old coming in. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it was the time when it became very apparent that they are changing consumer culture forever. And when you know this, because suddenly we have an entire generation that looks at self-generated or people-generated content as the means of learning and getting information rather than TV.
Yep.
Right?
UGC now. Who is king?
UGC was the way to go. And that was their norm. And that was going to continue to be their norm. So the sources of truth has been democratized and it's expanded, right? Mm-hmm. And brands needed to adjust. It was the time when what brands are saying about themselves and what news outlets were saying about these brands are no longer enough.
Yep.
It's what real people are saying about these things. So, and it was around that time when, okay, the real people, influencers were already established. But there is a nuanced new movement that was happening in the background. And this was the emergence of communities. This was the time of Buhay Zero Waste, of Home Buddies, when suddenly, your ulam, yung ganyan, where suddenly it doesn't have to be one voice, but people who you recognize are part of the same social tribe or having the same interest. Their level to influence could be so much more potent. Badly put, I am sure, if you have, kumare, if you were looking for a new cell phone to buy, mm-hmm. right? Obviously you go through the technical stuff, you look at the brand, you look at those professional reviews, technical reviews of people who know, right? But before you click that buy button, when you're about to add to cart, you look at the reviews.
Yep.
And when there's enough reviews that says, no, this thing is not good, you will not buy it.
Social proof.
Social proof. So that comment section, the review section, even after going through the Works of Awareness brand campaign, when you see real people saying things about it, that is the make or break of point of sale.
Correct.
Right. So there, so there is that shift from celebrity to real people as influencers, but now from influencers to real people, to real people in life, right? And coming out of the pandemic, what is, even if we are already enjoying face-to-face, what is left behind is that always-on connection that's now in our pocket, right? All of our social tribes are tied to either it's housed in Messenger or Viber. And because we were trained by the pandemic to seek social tribes online, that was also carried over to now.
Correct.
And so suddenly, there is an exponential growth of online communities.
Yes.
Whether that's keyboard enthusiasts, sneaker enthusiasts, or, you know, moms looking for yayas, they have a self-organized group. And within these self-organized groups, conversations are not just social anymore. It's transactional and commercial.
Correct.
Now, the problem is, I'm sure you have like 10 of those groups in your pocket right now. I'm sure. So we've been talking for an hour. By the time you look at that, you would have to back read 50 messages already.
Yep. At one point, it was me. Podcast Network Asia, that's what we built and how we built it. Unfortunately, and there's pros and cons also of getting a group to grow too fast, too soon. Because especially if you're the one funneling the commerce that happens. So Podcast Network Asia, when we started it out, dude, the model that we did was literally Kubo. We copied Kubo for what put the structure of how Kubo incubates and accelerates startups into podcasts. The main difference is we were bankrolling the creation of these podcasts. They were also dependent on us to create the content while the community was freaking spiral, was also growing and borderline spiraling out of control. Right? This is what happened in the middle of the pandemic. So totally agree of what you say about communities and how powerful, yet very, very hard for you to sustain how that is. And that's what I want to talk about when you created Hey Rumi. We'll talk about that more after the break. Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup. Because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes. All the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.ph payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey Hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn
earn in flexible tenors with hashtag UnoBoost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey, hustlers. I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, Dragon Pay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust Dragon Pay. And we're back in the break. We are still with Ina Flores and told us now how she was able to make that jump and why, again, influencer marketing was taking a whole new life of its own. Let's just call it what it is. TikTok just strapped a big ass rocket launcher on the back of social media when it happened, and it just skyrocketed during the pandemic, right? And now we can never look back. Because if you look at how TikTok also just changed the game, they're no longer just a social media platform. They are the key, and they have a target on their back in e-commerce. So they've created communities and also now the point of sale in what they're doing. So how did then you guys from InCircle create Heyroom, and how did that give you that ownership that you said was the third box you had to take?
Yes. So with Heyroom, so with InCircle, while Heyroomi wasn't Heyroomi yet, it was Project Kawaii.
Project Kawaii. Okay, so I want to say, I'll go on tangent here a little bit. How did that go, Project Kawaii to Heyroomi?
Because, okay, that's such a geeky little thing, right? Because okay. Kawaii,
wave.
That's what fans do when they see their idols or their influencers. So,
Lodi!
Kawaii.
Lodi!
Yeah. So it was Project Kawaii. We really wanted to do something. So precisely because in the beginning, we were, our natural resource, obviously, were these influencers. And we're seeing how these influencers are turning into enterprise entities themselves.
Yeah.
Right? Suddenly, they want to sell merch. Suddenly, their community is growing and they want to get in touch with these communities. And at the time, only randomly reply to a comment, or maybe some of them will have a messenger group with these fans. But again, messaging apps were very limited in terms of interacting with a community.
Yep.
So that was a gap that was there. And so the beginnings of Heyroomi was highly grounded on interviews with fan clubs of both influencers and celebrities, and interviews with influencers themselves. So I remember when we did the concept board, we ran it through the fans. When we did the branding also, we ran it through the fans. So from the very beginning, unknowingly, Heyroomi is a community effort. It's not just us. I personally also believe very much in being able and always connecting to the stakeholders that we're working with, I guess from training also, both in landscape architecture and in marketing,
yep.
It's really getting grounded on what the market wants. So when Hey Roomie started, it was actually meant to serve our network of influencers and their core followers. So that's how it started, right? And you know how in, so we created the prototype, we created the beta, and then we put it out by invite only for our network.
How did you build the tech though? Was this a ProudCloud partnership with Jay?
Yes. Jay, so very interesting. I mentioned earlier that my side hustles back in the day when I was so much younger had me meet a lot of people in the space, and Jay was one of them. We met him during our spin days, Social Play Innovation Network. He was interested in that local advocacy that we had, and he actually absorbed, I think, one of the PUP students into his company.
Nice.
So he knew that side of us. Yeah. So when I was telling him about the creator economy and doing something in that space, he was on board. So at that time, by that time, when I was creating this, Jay actually completed the team. So I was the one that was working full-time on the project. Isaac Rosa, with his network in InCircle, obviously brought in the initial influencers that we were working with. And Jules Veloso, with her work with brand as well, was there. So the beta version, when we sent it out, was very, very interesting.
Okay.
Obviously, we were still working with an MVP. But the influencers at the time, who were great and who were very in a great part of the project, but the followers were not coming in as fast as we wanted them to. So we were like, oh, what could be missing, right? And I remember when I was doing this, when I was creating Hey Roomie, face-to-face wasn't still the thing there.
Yeah.
It was still the last part of the pandemic because the Philippines was late, right? Because I am kind of exposed in fan life. So I don't know if you know Weavers, if you're familiar with the army, the BTS army,
yep.
Right? So in my mind, the idea is we wanted to create Hey Roomie to be the home for like the army, for example. For homegrown or indie talent to grow their own armies. And it's a platform where they'll be able to do that. But they weren't bringing in the users as fast as we wanted. So I remember there was, because you know how we are, right, in startup. Like once there are certain numbers that are popping up, you don't wait. You start thinking about how.
Three steps ahead.
I have to be three steps ahead. So I remember thinking, I want the army here. What's stopping me from bringing the army? I mean, I know I can't get BTS to be here because that was the prerequisite. Yeah. Need to bring the influencer, the celebrity, and then their followers will come. But I remember thinking, I know I'm never going to get BTS, but what is keeping us from bringing the army? So I'm like, why don't we experiment just bringing the fan club without the celebrity? So that's what we did. We contacted the fan club of a couple of local celebrities, which were the Popsters and Don Bell Official, which is the fan base of Donnie.
Yeah.
No. And that was an amazing discovery because these people are the most are the nicest, hardworking set of admins and volunteer workers. Because these are fans, right? And they're so well organized. And I remember when I talked to Don Bell Official, hi, could you? And they were excited about the app because they were thinking of creating their own app. To manage their users, precisely because the current platforms are not servicing their needs.
Makes sense.
And they're getting lost in all the information that needs to be exchanged. So I remember telling them, okay, we opened the room for you. If it would be nice if you could bring in 100 of your members in 7 days. That's right.
You gave them a quota, pa. Okay.
Yeah. Like, if you bring in 100 members in 7 days, I will give you a badge. You will win a badge.
Wow. All right.
In 3 hours, they brought in 1,000 members.
What?
And I remember that moment, my phone was literally vibrating for 2 hours straight from notifications of people coming in.
Wow.
And in that moment, we trended in Twitter Philippines. Okay. Then 30 minutes later, we trended worldwide on Twitter.
Wow.
Just by virtue of our partner org announcing on Twitter that they now have an HQ on Hirumi.
It's amazing.
And at that particular point in time, they didn't even cascade the passcode of their room in Hirumi to their users at large. It was only through their main chat group.
Okay.
But anyway, so that's when we validated the power of organized communities.
Got it.
In particular case, the fans. And it really cemented the fact that organized groups has taken a life of its own because of technology that's available to them. Mm-hmm. Filipino culture has always been very social. Mm-hmm. And because of what's available, they've really taken everything that they could that's free in the platforms and tried to make do with it. And so now Hirumi is here to kind of give them all of those in just one app. And that's why they got very excited and came in right away.
That's amazing. But the hard part about communities always is it's multi-sided, right? And you kind of have to have always the perfect balance all the time to make it work. Now, again, in any type of startup, it's not just all about the first acquisition. It's retention. It's a game of retention every time. How did you guys retain? Yeah. If there's 1,000 plus over a couple hours, how did you make sure that they came back and there wasn't just like a instant influx and then they go out?
So these organized communities already have status quo activities. Meaning it's not like they're new and they're just getting to know each other.
Okay.
In Hirumi, that's where they talk about what's the next hashtag they're going to use on Twitter for when Belle Mariano releases her movie.
What?
Or that's where they talk about, guys, we're gonna sell tickets. Who's gonna pasabay? And they talk about that. So it's really become the headquarters that they didn't have.
I love it.
So it's not about creating new ways for them to create content. It's really just, we're just a platform. We're just housing an existing behavior from these
things. Now, how did you guys make money then on that point? Because again, now there's a influx and there's this community that's thriving and it's growing in there. How did you guys monetize and also validate the business model that you guys have?
So what's interesting about Hirumi is it doesn't have a very straight, it's not as straightforward as e-commerce, right? There's so many ways you can skin this cat. But another very exciting discovery that we had is that brands are also recognizing the power of communities.
Yeah.
So we started monetizing 6 months in advance on our B2B.
What? How?
Yes. Because these brands wanted to partner with the Dawn Bell, with the Jacqueline. Otherwise, they wouldn't. How are they going to get in touch with them? These are normal people who don't know how to talk to brands necessarily or have access to brands all the time. So one of the... But I digress, right? Because that was a very... When brands came to us, we took advantage of that.
Of course.
But Hirumi, the way it's designed, is it's going to be a two-sided marketplace with brands as customers, but also with fan users as users. So the brands as customers is one of the things we're doing uniquely for communities is we brand match them with products or brands that's appropriate to their demographic.
Makes sense.
Because each community inside Hirumi, that's their virtual real estate. They can in that based on a campaign. They can put their affiliate links. There's a place there that we call My Favorites. And My Favorites is where they curate products, places, playlists that's appropriate to the team, right? So, and it's already equipped so that if they have affiliate links and codes, they can do that. But it's also a space for them to sell merchandise because these clubs are in the business of selling merchandise.
Got it.
So our lowest hanging fruit is brand matching because that's already there. That's immediate. But to scale it up, and what we're really excited about is the B2C part where users can sell fan merch. Mm-hmm. So fan commerce, basically, they do that as well. we are excited about the idea of membership. Again, there are communities where that's appropriate, where membership and subscription from the membership is appropriate. Huh? We're going to sell digital assets because that's also a thing. A lot of fan art is being exchanged. How do we empower these talented fans to either sell their merch? We're gamifying the experience. For example, if you are doing activities inside, you level up your as a user, as a badge. You get, you know, you're a super roomie, you do this. Uh-huh. And so admins can create gamified activities inside their room.
Nice.
That's based on, right? And part of our roadmap is to really equip the room with data. So if you are a room owner and you are saying, brand X, come here because these are my community, right? Uh-huh. You say, so your link, this is how many clicks that it got. This is how many the usage of this, the viewership of this. Uh-huh. They can also do polls and surveys inside the room. So if there are any particular brand who want to get the sentiment, that's there. So there's a lot of exciting things in terms of monetization. Uh-huh. And what we like about it is it's monetization that we share with a community.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, they are the ones, we're so surprised by how they use the app.
Right.
By how creatively they use the app. Like, so for example, a university org is going to use Hey Roomie different from K-pop.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we're surprised. And so one of the discoveries that we had is, yes, we started with fan clubs because they were a low-hanging fruit, right? But what we realized is the Gen Z, the young millennial generation, they're the source of the exponential growth of communities based on interest. These are the kids that are going to be like super good in computers and they're going to grow their own little community. So Hey Roomie is really expanding to any type of organized group or cohort that is, you know, spearheaded by a subject matter expert.
Nice.
So very exciting thing that happened recently is we finally greenlit Hey Roomie University.
Wow.
Last quarter, the virtual tambayan, we tested it with our first cohort of 15 orgs from 10 universities.
Okay.
Where the big four is there. Mm-hmm. But also other orgs in Cavite and Laguna. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of see and experiment on what's there. And I love, this checks the box, something that I like doing,
okay.
Right? Because I have a bird's eye view in different types of communities that represent different industries also. From a youth perspective,
yep.
What's lighting them up? What are they busy with? What's their area of interest? This emerging market that's going to, you know, define our workforce, yep. And
it's like having God mode on MIRC all of a sudden. oh my God.
But what I'm discovering is these are just regular folks. Yeah. I met with them. I had a lunch with 15 of them this Saturday. Uh-huh. And those 15 represented about 300,000 worth of people. That's
wow.
And these are very normal folks,
nice.
Who just love peep up, who just love this athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so powerful and so low-key. And it's so grounding because that's the power of community and that's the power of bringing people together based on passion points and joy, right?
Right.
So, Hey Roomie, I was telling them, you know, guys, as someone who also loves my own, I don't know, Chinese idol,
mm-hmm.
and the mababaw things that we like, I always tell them, I've worked in advertising, marketing, elbow deep on social media. The Filipinos are still the most active on social media globally, right?
Yep.
We like push that to the limit. In whatever that we love, we express it. And yet we don't have a social platform that is made by Filipinos, designed by Filipinos, with the nuances of the Filipinos. So I'm like, and that's what Hey Roomie is going to be. And we're going to co-create it together in 2024. So that was amazing.
All right. Now, last question before I let you go and we take
wrap this baby up. So you what I love about this episode is you really literally told us the evolution of you on every single step that you've taken. But one thing that's missing here is you haven't told us what the evolution of you is now running Hey Roomie as CEO. Because it's a totally different hustle, right? You said, okay, in landscape architecture and CL and whatnot, you told us how that added and probably subtracted pieces of you. But in Hey Roomie, what was that experience becoming founder CEO?
So I think with all of my experiences prior to Hey Roomie, I've always been the active worker behind the scene. Mm. I was always very hesitant to be the person in front of the camera. Mm. I was always number two, and I was very comfortable with that. Mm. I may be making decisions more as number two sometimes, mm. but what being a founder kind of puts you on a spotlight. I don't mean it in an ego way, but rather the kind of person that you need to become. You will not be able to lie about who you are. Mm. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yep. It will come out. The genuine you will always surface out.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was a natural original introvert. Mm. I was very, very introverted. And this kind of, I had to be a version of myself that's still authentic to that. But in a way that could talk to people about this thing that I'm building.
It's the CL thing all over again. You have to like perform in a freaking stage and, you know, in front of everybody.
Yes. Mm. What happens when you become a founder is you actually have to disappear yourself. I don't know if that makes sense for you because there are so many other things that's more important about your concerns about you. Because mm. you have to put the company, the project, what you're building, your people, empowering your people, getting revenue, talking to brands, and the normal concerns that we have the privilege of having as employees go out the window. There's no one to escalate to. Yep. Because everyone escalates to you.
The buck stops with you.
The buck stops with you. So this kind of accountability, responsibility, you have to, it's a lot of, it's not just grit. You kind of have to reinvent who you know yourself to be.
Yep.
Just stay in the game.
Yeah, and it's one of the highest forms of servant leadership. Because you said it right, at the end of the day, leaders eat last. And as a founder, the highest form of leadership or servant leadership comes here. Because when push comes to shove, it's not easy. Runways are short and all that. You eat last, right? And you have to lose yourself because also in a way, it's a bad thing sometimes. The startup is you and you are the startup, right? It's hard to dissect that sometimes, but eventually you're going to have to separate yourself as you fire yourself, as you grow your startup down the road. But you're right. It's synonymous. It's just one in the same at the same time. But at the end of the day, and unfortunately, you really get the last piece of the pie. If there's even a pie left.
And it's very interesting you saying that because it's almost like it's simultaneously all up to you and not about you.
Nope.
Right? You get what I mean? Like it's all up to you, but at the end of the day, it's really where you realize that you can't do it alone.
Yeah.
So you really become someone. It's very humbling, but at the same time, it's also very empowering knowing that, it's an opportunity for you to really connect with others, to bring in their own level of expertise and to allow others to shine and do well at, right? Because as a CEO, you know how when you know you're, especially for those that come from a corporate background or normal 9-to-5 job, it's about your skill and what you can do. And, it's my paycheck at the end of the day. But here, the dependency on others working with you and taking care of the company with you and going for that North Star along with you takes so much more than a very formal, this is our relationship, right? So your relationship with people become deeper as well. It becomes value and
It's codependency, unfortunately, because at the end of the day, it is what it is. Codependency. You're only as good as who your network is and who's actively rooting for you out of your own way, because let's call it what it is. Success is a team sport, and startup life is a team sport. No matter, and you're as a CEO, as a founder and whatnot, whatever you call yourself, you're just playing a role, but that role isn't the end all be all. It can be a pivotal role. It's a vital role of how, say, for example, you are the spark plug at a startup, but you need four other wheels to make it work. And that's the codependency and the startup life-ish. That doesn't make sense. The essence of startup life right there. Again, thank you so much, Ina. I'm just happy that now I know that you're a Batang CL also, and it's such an amazing episode. I'm pretty sure you're just not going to be the last time we're going to have you on. But before I let you go, please invite people over in Hey Room if they have a fan club, you have a group, or if they just want to participate and hang out with all their other fellow roomies. Is that what they call them? And where do they go and how do they do that?
So for those of you who are part of a community and want to open a room on Hey Roomie, just head on over to heyroomie.vip. You don't have to be a super big group. Yeah. You could be a small cohort, as small as 20. Just go on over there and sign up, and we'll gladly open a room for you. One thing, if you are also someone who is a subject matter expert at something and want to kind of be to educate the youth on it, whether or not, you know, you're great at AI or you're like a super anime enthusiast and you want to open a topics room on Hey Roomie, you're also invited to go to heyroomie.vip and create a room.
Sounds good. Again, Ina, thank you so much, Ina. But before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app, whether Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if we did say some jargon, it's going to be the show notes on HustleShare.com. And if you want to be like our premium supporters like Angelo Lee, Gab Abbott, and the rest of the brands that support HustleShare, we don't have a roomie, but we do have a page at premium.hustleshare.com where you can also subscribe and help us out so we can usher out more content like this, like the Daily Scrum and Founders Only. Your support goes a long way in helping us do this. We're doing this for almost 5 years now, and we want to do this forever and ever. Amen. But again, Ina, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Batang CL. All right. I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.